Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Good evening, or good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what time you're listening to this, but whatever time it is, I'm sure you're delighted to be hearing my voice. I'm Sean Eastridge. Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm here with two beautiful people. This is your first episode, and not the last, although we don't know how this will go. It might be your last. I'm going to hope it's not. But we've got Brandon and Lindsay Kendrick here. Hello.
Well, hello.
Hi, welcome. Nice to be here.
Welcome to this wonderful setup. I wish everyone at home could see this like intense, like super professional setup I have.
So here much soundproofing
in my house. So it's much soundproofing amazing. In the lovely living room of my my parents in law's living room. Parents in law. Am I saying that's not grammatical?
I've never known either. In laws.
In laws.
Parent in laws. There we go. That makes sense. But we've got a special treat for you today. We are going to be continuing our wonderful series. If you don't know what we're doing, basically we are going back through and watching the movies that we've always meant to see, but for whatever reason we haven't seen because we're terrible people. And in this case, I'm particularly excited because we're watching what is one of my like personal favorite movies of all time, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Not only, it's like literally like top 10 favorites, and it's my favorite Steven Spielberg movie. And Lindsay hasn't seen it.
Nope. Have not.
She has not, and it hurts me to hear that.
It's a sad thing. It's wrong.
It's all right. But what we're going to do is, first, we'll kind of talk a little bit about the movie. So this was made, Spielberg was on a roll pretty much. I mean, he'd done Jaws, he'd done Close Encounters. Kind of hit a bit of a snag when he did, 1941. I'm pretty sure that's the movie. And if it's not, then you can hate me as much as you want, audience members, all five of you. But 1941, he made this big budget movie that flopped big. And then he came back, he bounced back with Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it was during the shooting of Raiders of the Lost Ark that Spielberg was sort of like, when he was slow and bored on set, he was kind of like, he was thinking about this idea, this kind of mulling over, like he really wanted to make a movie about like his experiences as a kid dealing with his parents' divorce. And he said he had like an imaginary alien friend that he was kind of like, it became kind of his comfort during that time. So Melissa Matheson, who was a screenwriter who'd written The Black Stallion, she was dating Harrison Ford at the time. So she was on set and he approached her and said, "Hey, I have this idea." And she came back with a draft of the script and he was like, "This is amazing." And then they shot it, and less, I think about exactly a year later, E.T. was released. Which, first of all, is just insane. It just proves how like crazy amazing Steven Spielberg is. But the fact that it's like, you have Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then E.T. coming out like pretty much back-to-back. And it was crazy. And the movie did insanely well. I mean, it actually, when it came out, it beat Star Wars at the box office. It like supplanted it as the number one film of all time. It's just insanity. This movie kind of came out of nowhere. And funny story about it, people weren't really expecting it to do so well. And they were trying to get endorsements for, there is a product placement for candy that E.T. likes in the movie. And it ended up being Reese's Pieces, which Reese's were not doing well at the time. And no other candy would let them use their product in the movie because they're like, oh, it's going to bomb. Kids' movies don't do well. And Reese's Pieces, they were just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And because of this movie, they blew up and became a huge deal.
The greatest candy of all time, by the way.
Exactly. Yes. So God bless E.T. for making that happen. We wouldn't have it without it. But let me see. I have in my notes here how much it grossed. So it came out June 11th, 1982, which was, I think, Raiders of the Lost Ark came out June 12th, 1981. So that's insane. And then, so it had like a $10 million budget, and it ended up making like $793 million worldwide, which adjusted domestically, I think it was around $400 million, and adjusted for inflation, that like comes to like something a little over $1 billion.
Also, I looked it up, and Steven Spielberg was only 5 or 6 years older than I am right now.
That's
when
insane.
He did
so
this.
How does that make
That's
you feel?
Depressing.
How do you feel about your life?
I'm recording this podcast, Sean.
I think I know very well, Brandon. I think I know. But it's funny. So if you're looking at the adjusted for inflation list, E.T. is number 4 on this list. It's Gone with the Wind, Star Wars, Sound of Music, E.T. So this is a huge movie. And yet somehow, Lindsay, you haven't seen it. So what is up with that? How has that happened?
My first reaction is that I have really no idea. The movies that I watched growing up were heavily influenced by my older sister and what she had right. seen and what she decided that I would be watching. so we watched a lot of Indiana Jones. We watched a lot of Star Wars. We watched a lot of really great favorites, but for some reason E.T. never came up, and it right. wasn't an anti-E.T., like I'm not interested in it. It just passed us by, and I bought this really cool special edition E.T. movie probably back in high school, and we're like, okay, now we're all going to sit down and watch it, and it just stayed on the shelf, and it never happened.
It's probably best that it didn't happen, because there was... This is post Star Wars special edition mm-hmm. craze. And of course, George Lucas and Spielberg, they're best buddies. And I think Spielberg got a little too special edition happy.
Yeah.
Are we going to be
watching? We're watching the original. Just guns, for the folks right? at home, if you're going to end up watching this as
God.
Well. Yeah. The Blu-ray, the only version that exists, when Spielberg was planning the Blu-ray, he actually asked an audience that he was doing a Q&A with. He was like, do you even want the special edition on there? And they're like, no. And he's like, okay, it's not going on there. The exact Good. Opposite of what George Lucas does, which is like, I yeah. will do whatever I... Or let me get on. I won't do whatever I want because I hate Star Wars and I hate all my fans. So that's basically... Spielberg is the exact opposite. So more power to him. But it's funny. The special edition came out, I think, in 2002. And mm-hmm. it was... That makes sense. I think that was like the 20th anniversary of the film. And they added like CGI and yep. just super goofy stuff yeah. that I think we'll talk about after we watch the movie too. But... All right, so no hatred for E.T., just never ended up working out that
no,
way.
No, and I know a lot about the plot based on, honestly, the ride at Universal Studios. I know that he comes to Earth, and I know that he makes friends with a little boy, and I know there's a tiny Drew Barrymore. And
that's right, I think this is her first movie.
Yes.
And he says phone home.
Right? He's, yep. And, yeah. and the finger lights up for some reason. There's well, like a light up finger.
We don't even have to watch the movie. And, that's the entire movie.
Well,
right there.
And then I think the cops or the FBI or something are after him because, I mean, he's an alien. That's and right. then
and cops never like aliens.
They fly on the
and
bike.
Adults.
Is that
adults
like a stereotype that you think we need to get rid of? Cops not liking aliens? I mean, maybe there are cops in real life that love aliens.
Alien lives matter.
That's right. Exactly.
Yep, absolutely.
So, all right. Brandon, what is your history with this movie?
Pretty non-existent. I know I've seen it, but it was probably only like once. Okay. So I'm basically going to be going into this with fresh eyes, not remembering a whole lot about it.
Okay.
Mostly what I remember is what Lindsay knows about it from the ride.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I didn't see Indiana Jones until college. I didn't see Star Wars until high school. There were like a lot of movies that I watched a lot when I was a kid, but it's just like these classics didn't make it. I've told Lindsay before, one of the movies I remember watching a lot with my mom mm-hmm. was Raising Arizona, of all things. So like
that's so funny.
I equate Raising Arizona with like my childhood, but not like
which is a great
E.T.
movie.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's still one of my favorite movies yeah. now. But yeah,
it's interesting.
For me.
Yeah. So I have a funny story, and I'll tell the story, and then we can go watch the movie, and we'll come back and talk about it. But I've already said I love E.T. It's like in my top 10 favorite movies. It's my favorite Spielberg movie. When I was younger, I saw it when I was like maybe 8 or 9, and I was not into it for whatever reason. I liked it, but apparently I didn't like it that much because there was a kid at school who was like, I'll trade you your VHS of E.T. for my VHS of Power Rangers, the movie. And I was like, yeah. And I thought I was getting the better the better half of that deal. That just goes to show you how intelligent I was as a child and am to this day. I don't know if I'd trade Power Rangers for E.T., but, you know, there are a couple movies I might trade for Power Rangers, the movie. Star Wars prequels, sorry.
Hey, was that the first movie where we had White Ranger Tommy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this is like, I remember that. This is the peak. I love that.
I think that was like the first and last time the Power Rangers were like super popular. And then after that, it kind of was like,
Downhill. I love that movie. I can't say that I blame you for it. It's so good.
We might have to find somebody who hasn't watched that so we can do another episode. Lindsay hasn't seen it. She just raised her hand. So that's going to be a future episode.
I think I was done with Power Rangers by the time that came out.
Which is sad. So I rediscovered E.T. when I was a little bit older. I want to say right around the time that the special edition came out. I was at my grandparents and they had a copy of the movie. And I was just super bored. And I was like, I haven't seen E.T. in a while. And I put it on. And it suddenly clicked with me. There's a lot of, and I don't want to go too in depth. We can talk about it when we've watched it. But there's a lot of stuff about, you know, as I was saying, Spielberg put a lot of his feelings about his parents' divorce in this movie. And I have divorced parents. So suddenly on that level, it clicked with me. And I suddenly understood the personal, like the subtext of it, which when I was younger, I guess it didn't really mesh with my mentality. But I saw it again and suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, all the layers to the movie kind of revealed themselves. And over the years, I've kind of like, my love for it has just grown and grown until this point where I'm like literally just obsessed with it. You can't see it, but I'm wearing an E.T. costume and I have a tattoo of E.T. in a place I would rather not describe. That's not true, but it could be. And that's what's scary.
When was the last time you watched it?
Last time I watched E.T., I think it was when it first came out on Blu-ray just a couple years ago. Okay. So it's been a little while. But I'm always, this is perfect. This is like the perfect excuse to watch it again. So thank you for doing this for me. This is all for me, really. Not for Lindsay, not because she hasn't seen it. It's just for me.
We're just trying to ride your coattails.
Exactly. So, yeah. That's how it works for us too. I know the feeling. Sometimes I try to ride my coattails as well.
I'm very curious to see if it'll live up to these expectations. I don't necessarily have crazy expectations for it. Like, it's got to be the best ever, but I just know it's so well-loved that I need to love it or something is wrong.
And no, I don't. And I don't want to pressure. I think that's a very good point. I mean, when you have a classic like this that you haven't necessarily been on the bandwagon with, even Star Wars, I'm sure it's strange for some people to come in and watch that movie and have all that weight of like expectation. Mm. And then they watch it and they're like, oh, yeah, it was good. And people are like, what, are you crazy? Yep.
Only good?
I know, only good. It's the best thing ever. But, like, E.T. doesn't... E.T.'s kind of that... It's not quite that insanity level of fandom, but there is something similar, that kind of magic and that kind of love for this movie. But so you're kind of, as far as expectations go, what are you hoping for out of this experience as far as seeing it for the first time? Are you hoping to cry a lot?
I'm hoping that it will be touching. I like the backstory where you talked about his parents' divorce. I think it strikes me as sort of like I really loved Puff the Magic Dragon when I was little. And I know that there's a lot of those types of layers in that story. And I also like that you rewatched it again and saw it with new eyes, because I think all of our childhood movies should be rewatched as adults because you're going to catch things that you didn't catch before. So I'm hoping maybe if my first time is as an adult watching it, I will pick up on a lot of those things.
I hope so too. Brandon, what about you?
I'm just kind of hoping it lives up to the hype a little bit. You know, there's kind of, to go off of what Lindsay hinted at, there's so many movies that we kind of look through rose-colored glasses to our childhood that you know, my opinion and taste has evolved a lot. Right. And you know, one of my favorite movies when I was young was Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy, but I will not watch that movie again at this point.
Not even The Clumps. Number two.
No.
God, they just
was that the one? Which one had Janet Jackson in it?
That's number two.
That's what I thought. Saw it in theaters.
The third one with Rihanna or Lady Gaga. That would be great. That's what we're missing. And make a sequel to E.T. with Eddie Murphy in it, and then make a sequel to Nutty Professor with E.T. in it. And then everything will come full circle.
It makes sense.
Yes.
All right. We're going to go watch this wonderful movie, and we will be back.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right. We are back. We've just watched E.T., and I've already sung its praises, so Brandon, Lindsay, I guess we'll start with you since you've never seen it before. Okay. What did you think of E.T.?
I think that there were onions in the room down there because
you caught me.
Something was going on with my eyes
that
at
happens.
The end.
Randomly, onions will be placed strategically when I'm watching E.T. and it's I can't quite explain it, but it just seems to happen when that movie is around.
Yeah, I really didn't think I would get teary-eyed, not because it wouldn't be good enough, but because it's a concept that I was familiar with, and I knew a lot of the lines, and it had started to become, it has become integrated in our culture so much that I just thought I would be like, oh, that's really sweet, or I really appreciate this movie. But when it got towards the end, the closer and closer it got, like with the scene with when he was in the, get being frozen
coffin,
and
yeah.
he was zipped
by
up.
The way, spoiler alerts everybody. Yeah, and deal with it, because this is E.T. You probably should have seen it by this point, right, Lindsay?
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, full disclosure, we're definitely going into spoiler territory, so be prepared. But anyway, yes. The coffin and all that stuff, it gets you. It's kind of shocking.
Like, it was dark.
Yeah, it gets very dark.
And I thought it would get a little bit tense, but it was a lot more intense than I expected. That whole scene was just, they were just, and he was like apparently dead or basically dead for a while.
Well, what I love about Spielberg's approach to this movie is, I mean, it's, you could call this like, oh, it's a kid's movie, it's a family movie, which it is. But it's also that it doesn't pull its punches because of that. So it's very genuine. So the things like that they hit very hard, and the emotional beats hit very hard. And you're kind of like, wow, I'm crying over this animatronic that like, but it's so, I mean, the effects, it's incredible what they were able to pull off with that technology. And you really buy into it and you believe in it, even though like some stuff is a little dated as far as effects go, but you like, it, for the most part, it holds together very, very well.
I definitely agree. And like what you just hit on about, you know, it's a kid's movie, it's a family movie. I think that's a big problem that's missing with today's family movies, is that they're all missing that heart, and they're just like, let's go for cheap fart joke laughs and things like that. And, you know, right after we got done talking about it, we were talking about Pete's Dragon, and I really do think it has that. Yeah. That's what made the remake, this year's remake of Pete's Dragon, so good, is that it has that like emotion and the purpose behind what it was doing, not just like cheap entertainment.
And interesting you bring that up, because there are lots of parallels with Pete's Dragon and E.T. Like, they're very clearly of kind of the same vein, the same thought.
Yeah, a, you know, kind of mystical-ish creature found in the woods by itself, and there's a kid that needs a friend kind of thing.
Exactly.
They have this bond that no one else can seem to touch or understand fully.
Exactly.
But that creature also helps the child become more connected with its family. So like, it's like the Mary Poppins effect. So like this thing comes into their lives, they're having problems beforehand. And then I think what really hit me, and it might've not hit me as a child. I would have loved this movie as a child, by the way, but, as an adult, seeing the kids who were squabbling over probably more than they would normally fight over because of the separation of their parents, like working together to help E.T. When the older brother like rode the bike out of the driveway to go get E.T. He was like, you need to find E.T. and he rode out for his little brother. I was just so happy.
I know, it's so great. And it's really that, and I know we talked about it a little bit before we watched the movie, but that was something when I watched it again and it finally clicked with me, that understanding of the subtext of like, oh, this is a broken home and these kids are going through this rough stuff with their parents splitting up and the mom's going through a lot. It was all these like really beautiful, subtle things that like, I don't think a lot of kids movies in this day and age would approach. Like you said, Brandon, they're kind of like, oh, farts, it's funny, yay. But they never, E.T. is very genuine and heartfelt, and they approach these things with like a fresh perspective and in a very genuine way. And it really adds that, I mean, you are affected by the emotion of the movie itself, but it adds a whole other layer where you can see just the emotion of the scenes, and all this stuff is kind of feeding all the stuff that we actually see on screen. But,
and I think that's what keeps it holding together after 34 years, is that, you know, when you're watching it, it's got that really that early 80s hokiness,
yeah,
like to some parts, especially when all the kids and their friends are flying on right. their bikes at the end, and like the one kid is like, whoa,
I know.
It's just
tell
like
me when it's over. Yeah.
But like people love that, like with Stranger Things, like people latch on to that and they remember, maybe not that the hokiness is what makes it good, but they know that those all of those old movies were good, so they pull
right.
that from it.
And I don't know about you guys, but I was waiting for the Demogorgon to show up in the first scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Watching Stranger Things, it's like, yep.
Yeah.
E.T., Steven Spielberg, the two Stevens.
You're welcome, yeah. says Steven Spielberg.
Exactly. Stephen King, Steven Spielberg, all the way. So you really enjoyed it. How did you feel as far as the performances? I still, to this day, it's amazing to me that Steven Spielberg is able to get such incredible performances out of these kids who don't have a lot of experience, but they're all so good. So what did you think of young Drew Barrymore and Henry
Adorable.
Thomas as Elliot? I know.
Oh,
what
my
did you
gosh.
Think?
Oh, my gosh. So I knew that Drew Barrymore was talented as a child because I did see some of her older stuff, but she absolutely blew me away. All of the children... every single one, Elliot,
Henry Thomas.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He was great. Just like his emotions and his despair mm-hmm. and his happiness, his laugh just out of somebody else might sound over the top, but it's just so genuine coming
yeah.
from him. Like you're so happy watching him, you know, when he's happy, and it's just like, he's able to connect in that way. And a lot of child actors have to build themselves up
right.
to that point. But yeah, with like Spielberg, I don't know what he does, but
I mean, and not to mention that he's working with a not real thing, and
oh, yeah.
you're able to feel that connection between him and E.T. mm-hmm. You know, like nowadays it can be kind of harder for some kid actors, especially with the prevalence of CG.
Yeah.
But and you know, he might have had that physical prop there for E.T., but it's
right.
not it's physically there, but it's not alive. There's no connection for
exactly.
somebody to make a connection to.
Right.
And I think that you could really feel like the love between Elliot
yeah.
and E.T. mm-hmm. based off of his performance.
And I know a lot of the cast, even Dee Wallace, who plays the mom, she was saying how the animatronics team and the people pulling all the levers behind E.T., she said it was just so good that you, during the scene, even though, you know, subconsciously you knew he wasn't real, you totally bought into it and you believed in it. And Drew Barrymore, she's a kid, but she recalls like just being like, she's like, I knew he wasn't real, and I knew, you know, he needed a team of people to make him work and come alive. But she's like, I totally was like,
this is fun.
I totally believed in E.T. and I totally thought he was like an actual existing thing. But it's just a credit to that team. It really
absolutely.
Is. It holds up today. It's incredible, but I wanted
well,
to ask...
Well, you're kind of undermining the kids' performances
well,
here, Sean.
Okay, I guess.
Hello, everyone. We are going to take a quick break here to give a shout-out to our sponsor. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why did you have to interrupt this wonderful program for a sponsor shout-out? But I promise you will not regret listening to this. Look, we are doing a special deal with Loot Crate. Now, Loot Crate is awesome enough. They offer these amazing things for less than 20 bucks a month, like all sorts of crazy, cool geek items that you will love. And we have an exclusive crate dealing with the theme of magic. What's not to love about magic? I mean, you've got Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, etc. So much fun stuff. And we are offering this special deal. If you sign up for Loot Crate before November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time, you will get this awesome discount. Just go to www.lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter the code nerdparty and you will save money. What's not to love about that? And you have to make sure you get to it before November 19th. Otherwise, the deal will no longer be around. So don't miss out on this awesome, fantastic, beautiful opportunity. I think I might even do it right now. So you do the same. And let's go ahead and get back to our regularly scheduled program. God, it's really hard to say regularly.
So do you know how Henry Thomas got the part of Elliot when he was auditioning?
No idea.
So he'd auditioned before and Spielberg was like, I like him. But he basically brought him in and they did a little improv and he said, okay, this government guy is going to come and he's going to take away your friend or something. And you need to do whatever you can to stop him. And Henry Thomas, he recalling the story, he was like, I had just my dog had just died. So I kind of tapped into that. And this guy, you know, this guy's improvising with me. And Elliot or Henry Thomas just starts sobbing. And he's like, you can't take him away. He's mine. And Spielberg recalls, he's like, not there wasn't a dry eye in the house. And on the Blu-rays, you can watch the features. It's great. After he's done doing his audition, Spielberg says, all right, kid, you got the part. And it's like, kind of everyone kind of laughs, but it's like, he's like, no, that was it. I cast him. That was all. Yes. It was just so funny. But you see it in that audition. It's very, I mean, the kid totally believes in what he's doing. And throughout the movie, all the kids are that good. And it's very easy to invest in them because they feel so real. So the film was a huge success when it came out. It got nominated for 9 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director. It lost to Gandhi, which is interesting. I've never seen Gandhi.
I don't think I have either.
I might have seen it once, and that doesn't say a lot that I can't remember. I think I've seen at least parts of it.
Right. And so, I think Richard Attenborough, who directed Gandhi, he actually, when he won Best Picture, he flat out said in an interview, he's like, E.T. should have won this. He's like, Gandhi, he's like, I make okay movies, but E.T. is, hold on, I have the direct quote. He said, I was certain that not only would E.T. win, but that it should win. It was inventive, powerful, and wonderful. I make more mundane movies. It did win for original score, so let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, John Williams is just beautiful, but something really cool I thought, and this just speaks to Spielberg and Williams' working relationship, but the whole climax of the movie with the kids riding the bikes and all that stuff, that whole thing is one continuous piece of music. And Williams was trying to score to the footage of the movie, and it just wasn't meshing well. So Spielberg finally said, okay, forget about the movie. You go off, you record whatever, like, you know, you conduct the orchestra, and we will cut the movie to fit your music. And that's what we have today. But it's just, it's an incredible work, and I love this soundtrack. I don't know. How does this rank as far as Williams' soundtrack? I know you've just seen it, and it's probably hard to kind of, like, put it in, but as far as like if you could try to rank it or try to measure it up with his other work, do you have any gut reactions right now?
Well, the one thing that pops up that I could compare it to, even though the movies are so different, is Jurassic Park, which is maybe in the one of the top contenders for my favorite Spielberg movie. I don't know if I have an absolute, but one of the reasons why I love Jurassic Park is because the music is able to pull emotions from me, even if I'm just listening to the music alone.
Right.
And I think that this is right in that same territory where I've heard the music before. Like I said, I've been on the ride.
Yeah.
They play the music and I always liked it. But and the music alone is great. But and then when it was paired with what was happening in the movie, like the scenes where the E.T., like the main E.T. theme played, it had even more of an impact. So
That first bike ride is just amazing. I keep forget because I forget that the theme kind of it, you hear bits and pieces of it throughout, but that's I think the first time it plays in all its glory.
Like,
and it's like, oh, it's just like there are like iconic movie moments.
Right.
Like, and it's so hard. Well, it's difficult to really like find that in modern cinema. So when you go back and watch one of these like just classic movies and see a moment like that, and you're just like seeing all these different artists at the top of their game, and it's like, man, this is so good.
Right. Well, that's how you'll know when you watch a movie now, if it like stands the test of time, when you go back and watch it and like those moments and the music hits you in the right way, you know, it's gonna like keep going, and others might just be more easily forgotten. But
yeah,
I mean, the music was, I wasn't expecting it to not strike me, but it definitely was way more moving than I expected it to be.
Oh, totally. No, I agree. What about you, Brandon?
I have nothing to add. She covered it pretty well.
There are tears streaming down his face. <right now. laughs> So it might not have won Best Picture, but I know a lot of people have, I mean, a lot of people have come in retrospect and said, oh, yeah, it should have totally beaten Gandhi. And that's never happened in Oscar history. No movie has ever not won that should have won. The Oscars are always on point.
Absolutely.
Completely.
Right.
But the American Film Institute named it on their list of the best 100 American movies. It's number 24. So back in 2002, I don't know if Brandon, if you got a chance to see it, but they did this interesting special edition, and we touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about it because I think it's so funny. So the special edition came out in 2002, and this is right around the time where like CGI, the craze was like insane. Like you had to put your every, if you had a movie that was made years ago and you had a chance to revise it with new effects, you did it. And like George Lucas and Spielberg, since they're best buds, I think Spielberg saw this opportunity to touch up E.T. And it was interesting. A lot of what they did was they replaced E.T.'s face with
Hayden Christensen.
With Hayden Christensen.
Oh, okay.
And Hayden Christensen is just all over that movie. No, but they replaced the animatronic face with the CG face that looks, it looks terrible. It's also kind of an insult to the people who worked on the movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw it. That's actually what made me realize the first time that I had gone my entire childhood without having seen E.T. Mm-hmm. So the only good thing I think to come of that was to remind me to watch E.T. even though it didn't work.
Right.
I distinctly remember the commercials on TV. They were saying it's being released with all of these special things. So there was a scene with like a bathtub where they were giving E.T. a bath scene.
Yeah,
and he had like the CG face, and I was like, all right, I guess we're buying this because he's now getting a bath,
right?
and then there was the other thing that I didn't know about that you mentioned, Brandon, was the switching out the guns for the walkie-talkies.
That's
awful.
That is hysterical.
Yeah.
What do you think? Just talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, what was the line that the mom had? No guns, they're children. Like, in the edited version, what does she say? No walkie-talkies, they're children.
I think she just screams, they're just children, and it's like, why is she upset? But it is... It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe you just go a little bit too far with your tinkering. He also replaced the line, you're not going out dressed as a terrorist, because this was like post 9/11.
Right after 9/11.
Very sensitive. So
I still want to know what that terrorist costume looked like.
I know. That would have been great. That would have really...
A lot of their biases at that
Well, I feel like a 1982 terrorist would have to be like a Russian.
Well, in Back to the Future.
Been, Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
I always thought terrorists were Libyans. When I was a child, because of Back to the Future, I thought a Libyan was a terrorist.
I kind of want to go back for a second to what Lindsay just said about the bath scene, the deleted scene. One thing I thought about during the movie, and maybe this is wrong, but E.T., he just looks like he smells horrible. Does anybody else have that impression?
He looks very organic. And I know Spielberg has said, you know, he's like, is he male? Is he female? And he's like, I never really thought of him like, I like that we're referring to in this conversation. It's like, I never really thought of him as male or female. It's like, but you are referring to him as a him. I never thought of it as male or female, but he said he's supposed to be kind of like plant-like, like kind of a plant-like creature. The whole idea is that he's E.T. is a botanist, which is why he's like getting plants, and he loves plants and things like that. But so just to speak to that point, I think he has this very lived-in, earthy kind of feel to him.
It's probably their whole race is like that, and they're all like in the ride. Going back to the stupid ride again, they have like when it shows their, it actually shows their planet, and it's full of like flowers and plants everywhere, which is like, so they took that idea and they like went all out with it to kind of show that. So he's like super earthy. And he also has a lot of folds. So I'm thinking, like, you know, like a wrinkly dog, you really have to, like, clean that well.
But, like, it's CG. It, like, totally irons out all those, like, flaws and stuff.
Yeah.
So it just... I mean, the movie does not exist on... the special edition does not exist on Blu-ray. You can find it on DVD probably somewhere at, like, a used DVD store or something.
Burn it down.
But I just think it's so... It's, like, the opposite of George Lucas, just Spielberg... asking his audience, like, what do you think? Should I put the special edition on Blu-ray? No. And he's like, all right, I won't do it. So Spielberg has often cited this as one of his most personal films. He's always like, I think Schindler's List, he says, is his most personal, and then E.T. He also said this is the film that kind of made him ready to be a father. And it's, I mean, I think that's so, I mean, it's great. And I know the cast has kind of stayed in touch and stuff. And I know he's kind of been approached for a sequel. Obviously it's made tons of money, or the movie made tons of money. So a sequel was on the forefront of everybody's mind. And he was planning it for a little bit, And I know that he specifically, they just stopped because he was like, you know what, it like, it's a personal thing, and this movie meant a lot to me. And if I make a sequel, it's essentially robbing the movie of its virginity, kind of like as just an example of that innocence, like getting rid of it. I think that's amazing. I mean, what can you imagine, like, a huge director in this day and age saying, no, we can't make a sequel to that?
I don't want more money. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Right. I mean, like, that doesn't happen. I think that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, a sequel would probably be like a money printing factory.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes a lot, I think, of guts for a director to stand up and say, no, I want to keep the integrity of my movie untouched. You know, there's so much pressure on them all the time to make more money for the studios.
Exactly.
Can you imagine what it would be like if they were still under the old school contracts? Like back in, like, the actors were in back 70 years ago, he would have had to make like 3 more by now, I'm sure.
Exactly. It would have been terrible. Well, each one would have diminished the quality.
Yeah. I think that I wish that more directors would say no to sequels. It's not that all sequels are bad, just some movies are not meant to have sequels.
Right.
There's a finality about them, and we know that life goes on, but we don't need to actually see it. And I mean, Walt Disney knew that himself. I know that after, you know, his death and, you know, more recently, there's plenty of sequels. But I mean, when he made a sequel to The Three Little Pigs, because that was super popular, and he realized it was bad, and he said, you can't top pigs with pigs. And he's like, this is not good. I'm not going to make a sequel if it's not going to be appropriate.
Right. So I think a lot of times it's more financially focused than story focused.
Absolutely.
And in this case, it's amazing. And it makes me so happy. Like, I can just see an alternate universe where, like, they've just hoard out the E.T. franchise. Mm. And it's like the innocence of this movie is just kind of lost in that. So more power to you, Mr. Spielberg. Hire me and let me hang out with you. So final thoughts on the movie. Final reviews. Did it live up, Lindsay, to what you were hoping it might live up to? Did it meet your expectations?
It did. And I think it surpassed them a little because I had all this background knowledge on it to begin with. Not everything, but it definitely, I think, above and beyond. So, yes.
And Brandon, what do you think? You haven't seen it in a while. Is it better than you remember, or what do you think?
It definitely holds up really well. It's definitely a great movie. It lives up to the hype for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not too many movies, I think, that have that kind of reputation that can hold on, that can keep it going for over 30 years and not be kind of a letdown just because you expect so much of it. But it definitely met what I was expecting out of it.
Great. And everyone knows I already love it, but I'll say it again. I love this movie. Thanks.
He actually is holding us at gunpoint. That's why we have to say that we love it.
Yeah, you guys liked it a lot, didn't you?
Yes.
It was great. Oh, God.
So final ratings. How many... on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the lowest, 5 being the highest, how many flying bikes would you give E.T.?
You're going to put us on the spot like that. I'm going to give it 4.75 bikes out of 5.
Perfect.
Oh, that was nice. I'll go ahead and give it 5 out of 5 because I'm a nice teacher.
There you go.
I'll just round up. I think it was as close to perfect as you can get, if not absolutely perfect. So, yes.
Great. Well, awesome. I think we've well covered E.T., unless anyone has anything else to say, unless E.T. would like to ride down here from the heavens and grace us with his presence. No, doesn't.
I don't see anything. Right.
Well, aww. He'll live on in our hearts forever and ever, and that will be that. So, Brandon, Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for inviting us.
Glad we could have this experience together. And where can people find you on the social media, on the Twitter?
Oh, boy. I'm on Twitter. I'm not sure how much you would want to follow me, but it's at B Kendrick, KENDRICK 86. Same name on Instagram. I'm kind of boring. Lindsay's a lot more exciting than I am.
Okay. I am at a tiny Amazon, and there's an underscore between each word. That's a tiny Amazon. And my current name is Pocket Pumpkin.
Perfect.
It's festive.
It's festive. It's seasonal. And I'm at Yay Chandraman. Come talk to us. Do you like E.T.? Do you not like E.T.? Are you an idiot? But let us know what you think. And that's that. Again, thank you for being here.
And thank you, our audience, for listening in. And we will see you next time. Farewell.